Chapter 10. And there was an end of him. At this, the king said, "Serve him right, the rebellious ruffian." And now, as those lions won't eat that young woman apostrophe, let her off, apostrophe cried the crowd. "No," apostrophe roared the king. "Let the beefeaters go down, and chop her in two small pieces. If the lions defend her, let the archers shoot them to death. That hussy shall die in tortures." Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the crowd. "Shame, shame." Apostrophe, who dares cry out shame? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the furious potentate. "So little can tyrants command their passions. Fling any scoundrel who says a word down among the lions." Apostrophe, apostrophe, I warrant you there was a dead silence then, which was broken by a pangarang pang pang karang pang, and a knight and a herald rode in at the further end of the circus. The knight, in full armor, with his visor up, and bearing a letter on the point of his lance. "Ha!" apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the king, "by my fay, 'tis Elephant and Castle, pursuivant of my brother of Paphlagonia. And the knight, and my memory serves me, is the gallant Captain Hedzoff. What news from Paphlagonia, gallant Hedzoff? Elephant and Castle, beshrew me, thy trumpeting must have made thee thirsty. What will my trusty herald like to drink?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, bespeaking first safe conduct from your lordship, apostrophe, said Captain Hedzoff, "before we take a drink of anything, permit us to deliver our king's message." Apostrophe, apostrophe, my lordship, ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Crim Tartary, frowning terrifically. That title soundeth strange in the anointed ears of a crowned king. Straightway speak out your message, knight and herald. Apostrophe, reining up his charger in a most elegant manner close under the king's balcony, Hedzoff turned to the herald, and bade him begin. Elephant and Castle, dropping his trumpet over his shoulder, took a large sheet of paper out of his hat, and began to read. "Oh yes! Oh yes! Oh yes! Know all men by these presents, that we, Giglio, King of Paphlagonia, Grand Duke of Cappadocia, Sovereign Prince of Turkey and the Sausage Islands, having assumed our rightful throne and title, long time falsely borne by our usurping uncle, styling himself King of Paphlagonia apostrophe, ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, growled Padella. Hereby summon the false traitor, Padella, calling himself King of Crim Tartary apostrophe, the king's curses were dreadful. Go on, Elephant and Castle, apostrophe, said the intrepid Hedzoff. Apostrophe, to release from cowardly imprisonment his liege lady and rightful sovereign, Rosalba, Queen of Crim Tartary, and restore her to her royal throne. In default of which, I, Giglio, proclaim the said Padella sneak, traitor, humbug, usurper, and coward. I challenge him to meet me, with fists or with pistols, with battle axe or sword, with blunderbuss or single stick, alone or at the head of his army, on foot or on horseback, and will prove my words upon his wicked ugly body. Apostrophe, apostrophe, God save the king. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Captain Hedzoff, executing a demi-volt, two semi-lunes, and three caracals. Is that all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Padella, with the terrific calm of concentrated fury. That, sir, is all my royal master's message. Here is his majesty's letter in autograph, and here is his glove, and if any gentleman of Crim Tartary chooses to find fault with his majesty's expressions, I, Toughskin Hedzoff, captain of the guard, am very much at his service, apostrophe, and he waved his lance, and looked at the assembly all round. And what says my good brother of Paphlagonia, my dear son's father-in-law, to this rubbish? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the king. The king's uncle hath been deprived of the crown he unjustly wore, apostrophe, said Hedzoff gravely. He and his axe minister, Glomboso, are now in prison waiting the sentence of my royal master. After the battle of Bombardero, apostrophe, of what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the surprised Padella. Of Bombardero, where my liege, His present majesty would have performed prodigies of valor, but that the whole of his uncle's army came over to our side, with the exception of Prince Bulbo. Ah, my boy, my Bulbo was no traitor. Cried Padella. Prince Bulbo, far from coming over to us, ran away, sir, but I caught him. The prince is a prisoner in our army, and the most terrific tortures await him if a hair of the Princess Rosalba's head is injured. Do they? Exclaimed the furious Padella, who was now perfectly livid with rage. Do they indeed? So much the worse for Bulbo. I've 20 sons as lovely each as Bulbo. Not one but is as fit to reign as Bulbo. Whip, whack, flog, starve, rack, punish, torture Bulbo, break all his bones, roast him, or flay him alive, pull all his pretty teeth out one by one. But justly dear as Bulbo is to me, joy of my eyes, fond treasure of my soul. Ha, 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 ha. Revenge is dearer still. Ho, tortures, rack men, executioners, light up the fires and make the pincers hot, get lots of boiling lead. Bring out Rosalba. XVI. How heads off rode back again to King Giglio, Captain heads off rode away, when King Padella uttered this cruel command, having done his duty in delivering the message with which his royal master had entrusted him. Of course he was very sorry for Rosalba, but what could he do? So he returned to King Giglio's camp, and found the young monarch in a disturbed state of mind, smoking cigars in the royal tent. His Majesty's agitation was not appeased by the news that was brought by his ambassador. The brutal, ruthless, ruffian royal wretch. Giglio exclaimed. As England's PC has well remarked, the man that lays his hand upon a woman, save in the way of kindness, is a villain. Ha, heads off. That he is, your majesty, said the attendant. And didst thou see her flung into the oil? And didn't the soothing oil, the emollient oil, refuse to boil, good heads off, and to spoil the fairest lady ever eyes did look on? Faith, good my liege, I had no heart to look and see a bodious lady boiling down. I took your royal message to Padella, and bore his back to you. I told him you would hold Prince Bulbo answerable. He only said that he had 20 sons as good as Bulbo, and forthwith he bade the ruthless executioners proceed. O cruel father, O unhappy son! Cried the king. Go, some of you, and bring Prince Bulbo hither. Bulbo was brought in chains, looking very uncomfortable. Though a prisoner, he had been tolerably happy, perhaps because his mind was at rest, and all the fighting was over, and he was playing at marbles with his guards, when the king sent for him. Oh, my poor Bulbo, said his majesty, with looks of infinite compassion, hast thou heard the news?
For you see Giglio wanted to break the thing gently to the prince.
Thy brutal father has condemned Rosalba utter to death. Prince Bulbo. What? Killed Betsinda? Boo-hoo-hoo, cried out Bulbo. Betsinda. Pretty Betsinda. Dear Betsinda. She was the dearest little girl in the world. I love her better 20,000 times even than Angelica, and he went on expressing his grief in so hearty and unaffected a manner that the king was quite touched by it, and said, shaking Bulbo's hand, that he wished he had known Bulbo sooner. Bulbo, quite unconsciously, and meaning for the best, offered to come and sit with his majesty, and smoke a cigar with him, and console him. The royal kindness supplied Bulbo with a cigar. He had not had one, he said, since he was taken prisoner. And now think what must have been the feelings of the most merciful of monarchs, when he informed his prisoner that, in consequence of King Padella's cruel and dastardly behavior to Rosalba, Prince Bulbo must instantly be executed. The noble Giglio could not restrain his tears, nor could the grenadiers, nor the officers, nor could Bulbo himself, when the matter was explained to him, and he was brought to understand that his majesty's promise, of course, was above everything, and Bulbo must submit. So poor Bulbo was let out, heads off trying to console him, by pointing out that, if he had won the Battle of Bombardero, he might have hanged Prince Giglio. Yes. But that is no comfort to me now. ... said poor Bulbo. Nor indeed was it, poor fellow. He was told the business would be done the next morning at 8, and was taken back to his dungeon, where every attention was paid to him. The gaoler's wife sent him tea, and the turnkey's daughter begged him to write his name in her album, where a many gentlemen had written it on like occasions. Bother your album. ... says Bulbo. The undertaker came and measured him for the handsomest coffin which money could buy. Even this didn't console Bulbo. The cook brought him dishes which he once used to like, but he wouldn't touch them. He sat down, and began writing an adieu to Angelica, as the clock kept always ticking, and the hands drawing nearer to next morning. The barber came in at night, and offered to shave him for the next day. Prince Bulbo kicked him away, and went on writing a few words to Princess Angelica, as the clock kept always ticking, and the hands hopping nearer and nearer to next morning. He got up on the top of a hat box, on the top of a chair, on the top of his bed, on the top of his table, and looked out to see whether he might escape as the clock kept always ticking, and the hands drawing nearer, and nearer, and nearer. But looking out of the window was one thing, and jumping another. And the town clock struck 7. So he got into bed for a little sleep, but the gaoler came and woke him, and said, "Get up, your royal highness, if you please, it's 8:10. ... So poor Bulbo got up. He had gone to bed in his clothes,
the lazy boy,
and he shook himself, and said he didn't mind about dressing, or having any breakfast, thank you, and he saw the soldiers who had come for him. "Lead on," he said, and they led the way, deeply affected. And they came into the courtyard, and out into the square, and there was King Giglio come to take leave of him, and his majesty most kindly shook hands with him, and the take-off that marched on. When hark! Ha-wah-wah-wah-wah! A roar of wild beasts was heard. And who should come riding into the town, frightening away the boys, and even the beadle and policeman, but Rosalba. The fact is, that when Captain Hedzoff entered into the court of Snapdragon Castle, and was discoursing with King Padella, the lions made a dash at the open gate, gobbled up the 6 beefeaters in a jiffy, and away they went with Rosalba on the back of one of them, and they carried her, turn and turn about, till they came to the city, where Prince Giglio's army was encamped. When the king heard of the queen's arrival, you may think how he rushed out of his breakfast room to hand her majesty off her lion. The lions were grown as fat as pigs now, having had Hogginarmo and all those beefeaters, and were so tame, anybody might pat them. While Giglio knelt most gracefully, and helped the princess, Bulbo, for his part, rushed up and kissed the lion. He flung his arms round the forest monarch. He hugged him, and laughed and cried for joy. "Oh, you darling old beast, oh, how glad I am to see you, and the dear, dear Betts that is, Rosalba." ... "What, is it you? Poor Bulbo." ... said the queen. "Oh, how glad I am to see you." ... and she gave him her hand to kiss. King Giglio slapped him most kindly on the back, and said, "Bulbo, my boy, I am delighted, for your sake, that her majesty has arrived." ... "So am I," said Bulbo, "and you know why." ... Captain Hedzoff here came up. "Sire, it is 8:30. Shall we proceed with the execution?" ... "Execution? What for?" ... asked Bulbo. "An officer only knows his orders," ... replied Captain Hedzoff, showing his warrant, on which His Majesty King Giglio smilingly said, Prince Bobo was reprieved this time, apostrophe and most graciously invited him to breakfast. XVII. How a tremendous battle took place, and who won it, as soon as King Padilla heard, what we know already, that his victim, the lovely Rosalba, had escaped him, his majesty's fury knew no bounds, and he pitched the Lord Chancellor, Lord Chamberlain, and every officer of the crown whom he could set eyes on, into the cauldron of boiling oil prepared for the princess. Then he ordered out his whole army, horse, foot, and artillery, and set forth at the head of an innumerable host, and I should think 20,000 drummers, trumpeters, and fifers. King Giglio's advance guard, you may be sure, kept that monarch acquainted with the enemy's dealings, and he was in no wise disconcerted. He was much too polite to alarm the princess, his lovely guest, with any unnecessary rumors of battles impending. On the contrary, he did everything to amuse and divert her, gave her a most elegant breakfast, dinner, lunch, and got up a ball for her that evening, when he danced with her every single dance. Poor Bobo was taken into favor again, and allowed to go quite free now. He had new clothes given him, was called my good cousin by his majesty, and was treated with the greatest distinction by everybody. But it was easy to see he was very melancholy. The fact is, the sight of Betsinda, who looked perfectly lovely in an elegant new dress, set poor Bobo frantic in love with her again. And he never thought about Angelica, now Princess Bobo, whom he had left at home, and who, as we know, did not care much about him. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.